Does being alone equal loneliness? Are those two things indelibly linked? Hello, welcome to Good Word. I'm Dave Thomas, the host for this quarter, and I'm happy to welcome once again two colleagues, Jen Ogden and Brent Berglund, both of them who have been involved in our discussions before in this one. And today we're asked to talk about the question when alone, when people are alone. Genesis 2:18 tells us it's not good for man, the generic term, to be alone. God says, I will make the New King James Version says a helper comparable to him. I think that there are better translations than that, but that's the one that shows up. And the lesson invites us to think about those seasons in life when we are alone. And I know that all of us in one way or another have spent some seasons alone. And one of the big issues that I would like to raise is this question of being alone and loneliness in the minds of so many people. If you live alone, or if you're not married, or if you're divorced, or if you're old, or whatever it is, that if you're alone, you're automatically lonely. And this is the problem of life. Any comments on that subject?
Yeah, I think the two can be sometimes linked, but they certainly don't have to be. I think people can be alone and certainly have a sense of God's presence with them and realize I'm not alone in the world. They can have very meaningful relationships without having a family immediately around, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't have a family anywhere nearby except for my chosen family, and I have.
And you got to choose a family. Most of us get the family we get, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, I got both. Okay. Right. I got the family I got, but then I get the family I choose as well. So I don't live near any of my biological family, and so many times people would say I'm alone. And that might be true, but I'm very rarely lonely. And I think that comes very much from your perception of connectedness and your relationships, the depth thereof, the vulnerability thereof, the support that you receive from those relationships. I don't think alone equates with loneliness. Doesn't mean I've never experienced loneliness, but it doesn't mean that I'm, you know, curled up in a corner crying myself to sleep, feeling sorry almost for myself.
And is loneliness sometimes beneficial? Oh, by the way, I want to throw in here too that I think that there's also a personality thing in here.
Yes.
Like I know that I can be quite happy if you tell me I have to be alone for the day, because I'll be reading or working on some project, and I'm a very introspective person. So to tell me I'm going to be alone is not punishment. Okay? Now, I like a crowd, but if you send me to my proverbial room, I'm just fine.
Yeah, my mom used to say that. She said you're the only boy I know that liked time out, because she would send me to my room. It's like, oh, you mean I get to go to my room and play with my Legos all by myself for an hour or two? Okay,
and nobody will intrude.
It was great. I would read a book, and I've never known the idea of boredom. That doesn't mean I don't feel lonely once in a while. And, you know, it's interesting looking at the three of us. We come from three kind of different backgrounds. And, Dave, you're married still. Yeah. I was married for 20 years and am not now. And, Jen, you're single. And so we come from different perspectives, but maybe all having experienced times when we were alone, some of us more than others. Right.
I can also talk about some times of loneliness. You know, I mean, I went away to boarding school when I was 10 years old.
You're just a baby.
And even though there were other people there, I remember being enormously homesick for the first time I went away. You know, like I'm guessing for a month or 6 weeks, I was very lonely. But then you adjust to your circumstances. So are there any benefits to loneliness? Not aloneness, but loneliness.
Yeah, you know, I was driving to Portland to teach on the Portland campus several months ago, and was listening to a song by Amy Grant, and she sings a song called I Love a Lonely Day, because it chases me back to you, God.
Oh, really?
And I thought the lyrics to that were important and powerful for me, because there's times when being alone makes me realize that I need to not be alone. I need to recognize the presence of God there, and that the loneliness gives me the time, the quiet, the you said the introspection, you tend to be introspective. It gives me a moment I tend to fill my life with busy things. In my busy life, it gives me introspection to think about where God is.
Yeah, but aren't you running loneliness and aloneness together there, Brent?
Sometimes. Mm.
I think that we look at the trajectory of life. There are some people who are going to be alone a lot more than others. I'm not talking about being lonely, but a question that comes up is singleness, and I don't know if I can put you on the spot, Jen, but you know, not everybody is automatically going to be married. We assume that's the path of everybody, but there are notable people in the Bible who were not married, and I would list Jesus as one of the primary examples of that. And it seems like sometimes we think that being single is an abnormality. I don't know if you run into that. You know, I mean, that people who are, and I hope we get away from that, because there are a number of reasons why people are alone. Sometimes it's because of diseases that are inherent. Sometimes it's because they are so focused on mission. Sometimes that there's just not an opportunity to get married. Some people are just not constituted to be married. So I don't, would you dare make any comments about that, Jen? Have you run into nonsense over that subject?
Absolutely. Okay. Yes, I have congregants who try to introduce me to their sons or their nephews or that sort of very awkward.
I mean, you get invited to lunch and then find yourself sitting across the table from an eligible young man.
Yes, yes. It's very...
I have a son who's single and he talks about the same thing.
It's
and they
so
don't
awkward.
Tell you ahead of time.
No, they don't warn you. Like, you have no bracing. And like, anytime I'm with any of my friends who are male, people will be like, so who's that? You know, and it just... Really? You know, it's very awkward. But I hang out with a wonderful group of people that all happen to be married, and most of them happen to have young children. And I'm just Aunt Jen, you know? Yeah. I just get to hang out and be me, and there's no pressure to, so who are you dating now? So who's this? So what's that? There's none of that. And I really appreciate just having friends who understand that. Yeah. And I think we could do better as a church in caring for our single folk and not make creating these awkward situations and almost trying to enforce this idea of everybody must be married to be fulfilled or to be happy.
Yeah.
Because I'm not alone. I know it's right. I know that it's not good for man to be alone, and I'm in that humankind, but I'm not alone.
Yeah, because you
and
have,
I think that's very important for us to differentiate that.
You have significant relationships that mean you're not going to be automatically lonely, and you are attached to, as you said, a family of choice.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to note that Paul is very clear in 1 Corinthians 7 about what singleness can mean as opposed to being married. He says, look, if you get married, you are taking on burdens. He says the married man who might consider mission for God now has to consider the things of his spouse. And if that is the focus of your life, God doesn't say that's bad.
No.
It can be good, but you have to make... We're talking about choices this quarter. If I choose to take care of the things of my wife, that means there are certain things in ministry that I can't do.
Yeah. And I think it's very important to realize, to build on your point there, Brand, is that if you do choose to get married, you have to give priority to your spouse and your family. I mean, that I think is a high mandate in the Bible.
Absolutely.
But and it does make you missional in different ways.
It just means your mission is much more local, and it may limit what you do more internationally or even in at your work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a colleague years ago who had some trouble because he was so busy working. He was a pastor of a church, of some churches, and his wife, one day to make a point, left, and she went and put up in a motel for 4 days and said, you know, when you're ready to have a conversation, come and get me.
Wow.
And so he went to get her, and they had a very interesting conversation, because she said, so what's more important, your work or me?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, I work for God, and so if push comes to shove, it's going to be God ahead of you. And I think he's lucky to still have a kindly wife.
She stayed.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. Stayed, yeah, wow. They're actually quite happily married. She did that kind of as a dramatic statement. I think it's a dangerous thing to do. It's better to have that conversation without that kind of thing. But interesting, and I agree with you, Jen. Oh, let me add another thing. You know, the demographics today are very interesting, because there's some countries where there are more males than females, and so everybody cannot be married, and there are some other countries where there are simply more females than males, and so there is no prospect of everybody being married. It's just not going to happen. And so I agree with you. I think that sometimes in church we default always to married people with children, and there are more and more people today who are not in that particular kind of settling.
Well, and we're running into a cultural problem now too. And that cultural problem is that young men and women are waiting much longer to get married.
Yeah, yeah.
So if we don't figure out how to treat singleness within the body of Christ and in broader culture, we're gonna lose a lot of people's trust, I think.
Agreed.
Can I bring up also another way that aloneness occurs, and that's when marriage ends.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it can end sometimes from death. And I feel very, very sad for people who've been happily married for 50, 60 years and they lose a spouse and they feel like half of them has been buried and the other half remains. And sometimes it occurs because of divorce. And I don't know, what can we say about that? And I would like to talk about divorce a little bit because I think there's a lot of misunderstandings about divorce. When you read the Bible, you have some very different kind of language there. And I think we made a big mistake in the Protestant world of taking the words of Jesus as universally prescriptive.
Yes.
And actually, I think it's we know better now that that's not to be universally applied. In fact, the words of Jesus in Matthew, I think, cannot be universally applied because the sins of one person become the redemption of another one. And you're looking for guilty and innocent parties. And, you know, most relational breakups don't have that clean a break.
I would argue that the standard is always higher than we will reach. And God sets the standard of marriage very high, and that is a man and a woman for life. The challenge is that that doesn't always happen. Mm-hmm. And Moses admitted it. Yep. Jesus says, look, because of the hardness of your hearts, Moses allowed divorce. It's not God's ideal. And I think your lesson, Dave, that you pointed out brings out something important, and that is it's always a tragedy when it ends.
Yeah.
But sometimes it is important that the two not be together.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I think if people are looking for a universal statement on divorce in the Bible, it's Malachi 2:16, where God says, I hate divorce.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't hate divorced people. I sorrow with them.
Yeah.
You know, but I hate divorce because it destroys, this is my paraphrase, destroys the benefits that are supposed to come to humans through marriage.
And for those who have no choice simply because a partner chooses to leave, then what do we say, right?
Yeah,
well, now you're divorced. And
yeah. And you know, in this culture now, you can, with no-fault divorce laws, you can be divorced even against your will. You have no recourse. Your spouse can, in 90 days, tell you you're gone, and it's all over.
Yeah.
A little word. We got a minute or so left here. I wonder about the people who have lost loved ones through death.
Mm.
You know, and sometimes they're young, sometimes they're old. What can we do for them? How do we deal with their aloneness?
I would say that the elderly that I've seen who have lost someone, and sometimes the younger ones, they need people to wrap their arms around them and to ask them the practical questions. What can I make a meal for you? Especially if it's a husband who's lost a wife who has been the one who's cooked in a more traditional home.
Yeah.
Like, how can we help you? What do you specifically need?
You know, I remember early on in my ministry, before we had kids, my wife and I invited the old people from the church home for Sabbath lunch. It was an absolute riotous occasion. These are fascinating people. We had about 8 or 10 of them. It was a small church. They all sat around the table and we ate together and they started telling stories and they laughed and they talked about how often they are alone and lonely, but this was a great therapy for them, you know. I want to just throw one thing, and we don't have really time to talk about it, or maybe we should though, that there's sometimes a loneliness that occurs because of religious difference. You know, you could be married and otherwise feel well connected, and yet because of religious difference, there's this deeply established separation, because at the profoundest level of your life, you're at odds.
Mm-hmm.
And even if there's not fighting over religious beliefs, there can be something. And I think it's incumbent on us all to include people in our circles who would otherwise be alone and lonely, and I think that's perhaps the best antidote. So anyway, thank you very much, Grant and Jen, for chiming in here, even with some personal experience. And my thanks to Brad Williams, our engineer, and thanks also to those of you who faithfully listen to Good Word for the Good Word. I'm Dave Thomas.
Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.